You ready to check your feelings at the door?
Check it out. Check it out.
This is Am I Reister or Am I Wrong? We're bringing you facts and only the truth. Now, Am I Reister or Am I Wrong?
I'm George Reister, he's Ralph Amsden, and this is Reister or Wrong, the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door before you even show up, because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. And you guys can leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts, and also leave a thumbs up, a like, all of that sorts of stuff, and leave a review. And you can get a hold of us. I'm Matt, I-M-M-A-D, at unafraidshow.com, or shoot us a text message, 818-293-7547. So today, the Bucks win the championship. They come back and beat the Suns 4-0. Now, is Giannis the best player in the world? How did Mike Budenholzer pull this off when he was possibly going to be fired? Deion Sanders walks out of a press conference because he didn't want to be called Deion, because nobody calls Nick Saban Nick, even though that's not true. One gotta go today for Chancellor Consequence, and the SEC's COVID rules are not playing around. You don't get vaccinated, you are going to have an issue. And Friday Night Lights is back. Jeff Bezos goes to space in a penis, and Maria Taylor leaves ESPN. Now imagine what that conversation would have been like trying to get her to come back for game 7. That's what we got today. But first, you guys can use the phone number 818-293-7547 to call Ralph and console him after his Suns lost the series 4-2. Ralph, you are back to being a poverty franchise. You are currently in Suns garb. I really like the throwback hat. How are you feeling less than 24 hours removed away from your team losing a championship after squandering multiple games and your best player not coming up, not being legendary?
So, I mean, I do find it interesting that you spent all this time trying to convince me it was your team and not my team up until about 11:45 p.m. Eastern yesterday, and now they're back to being my team, and I'm still rocking them to this day. And I have plenty to say on it, but I'm not down about it. I feel like I let the 1993
Yes, you are. What are you talking about? I hear the energy in your voice. I see your face. You are clearly...
I'm saving up energy for everything that I have to say on this show. I'm telling you that I let the 1993 finals loss define a good part of my life, and I don't feel that way this time. I feel like we lost to somebody who's playing like he's the best player in the world, and I don't think the expectations were there to begin with, and I think the expectations being there starts now. I mean, you set the tone for yourself to be competitive year in, year out, and if we end up like a Miami next year, which, you know, barely scraping by and getting swept out of the playoffs, then I'm going to be upset. As it stands right now, I don't think that there's anybody on this earth. As it stands right now, there is nobody on this earth that thought that the Phoenix Suns would be playing in a game 6 well into July in the NBA Finals. And the fact that they were there, I'm happy. I'm happy that they did what they did, but the real work starts now. I'll be pissed if they don't build off this.
Ralph, come on, bro. That's the most ridiculous thing that I've heard.
Are you encouraging me to be mad?
No, I'm just
I'm not mad.
I'm just saying, like you can't get to the NBA Finals, be up 2-0, and be like, well, nobody expected us to be here. You had a shot.
The truth.
Chris Paul did not play well in some games. Devin Booker... Devin Booker in clutch time played extremely poorly. Would you admit to that?
One player played well throughout this series from start to finish.
Who is that?
One. Jake on Crowder? Both teams. No. Jay Crowder, I think in the first game, was like 0-for-7 from 3 or some nonsense. It was Giannis. That's it. There was one player who played consistently well from start to finish. And I got a million statistics to back it up, and I'm not in the mood to have anybody make up facts like Doug Gottlieb or Ryan Hollins were trying to do and saying that anybody but Giannis was the MVP. Without Giannis, they get blown out four games in a row, period. He was unstoppable. He put together the type of performances that we were used to seeing when the Lakers were going back to back to back. And I'm not mad at that. Everybody had off games in this series except for one guy. One guy. That's it. It wasn't a matter of, oh, the Bucks put it together and the Suns didn't. Drew Holiday shot 100 or basically what, 14.3, however you, he was 0.143 below his season average in field goal percentage for the series, including the one game where he got a hot hand. He played like Dookie on the offensive end. So you can't say he's the one that outplayed everybody.
No,
Chris Middleton's shooting percentage was down from his regular season. Chris Paul's was up.
Oh,
Chris
Paul
is a 16-9 guy who was going for like 23-8 on 55% shooting every night. And people were like, he's not perfect. He literally elevated his game.
No, he did. And that's why he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no Chris Paul debate about this now. My question to you is I'm sitting here looking at what Devin Booker did not do, right? If you look at what Devin Booker did not do in this series, and when they had the late game turnovers by him and Chris Paul, that was the, like, all of these games were close except for what, game three? All of them were close. They were, well the Suns won by what, 13 the first game, 10 the second game. Then they got blown out. And then 4, 5, and 6, the Suns squandered game four. They had a chance to win game five. They just fell apart when it mattered the most. Would you agree
with that? Or they got beat. There's two different ways to look at it. You can fall apart or you can get beat.
One guy
is unstoppable.
Falling apart is they got tight. They missed wide open shots.
Who spent the entire series altering their shots to make them nervous? Why all of a sudden was DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker in last night's game six under the basket with nobody guarding them and they both pulled Ben Simmons? That's the type of stuff that happens when you get so many shots altered that you forget what you're doing.
Yeah, but
they got
DeAndre Ayton is a whole nother story. He made me want to throw things at the television because what are you talking about? He's under the basket. He won't dunk the ball. He shies away from contact.
Right. He got beat mentally, physically, emotionally. He got
beat. And
you have to think about the ages of some of these guys, because if you hold the Phoenix Suns at the current age that they are to this standard, then you got to retroactively and go back and do it to all of these players who also underperformed their first time in both the playoffs and the NBA Finals. DeAndre Ayton is 22 years old. Devin Booker is 24 years old. This is their first time in the playoffs.
The
lack of consistency is going to be the issue. But at the end of the day, they still got 14 wins, and we're going to talk about it like it was a first-round sweep exit?
No, that's not the way I'm talking about it, Ralph. But the truth is, there is something wrong with a big man who won't dunk the basketball. Like, he shies away from contact even when Giannis wasn't even standing there. You're bigger than Giannis.
He went up for a dunk to clinch a game, and guess who came off defending the lob to block his shot?
So that
type of stuff messes with
soft.
The psychology
that
of a 22-year-old.
That was
he's
soft.
22. He's 22, and he's never been the guy to dunk the ball. He only started doing it once the playoffs started.
That's a problem. That I'm not criticizing.
That's a problem insofar as the NBA Finals. But this is like getting two term papers back in a row. One's an A+, and one's an A. And you're going to spend all your time talking about the fact that you messed up so bad that you fell from a 99% to a 95%. When there's a lot of people out there who got D's and F's. This was a very good performance for a very young team that nobody expected to be there. The Suns played four very good games. The Bucks played four very good games. The difference was Giannis was there from start to finish, game one through game six. It doesn't have anything to do with the Suns.
But you can't say
it's not a matter of being
upset about this, Ralph.
What is there to be upset about?
You lost the championship and your star players didn't play well.
We got
They crumbled.
First of all, we're talking when you talk about stars. How do you know somebody's a star?
By how they play in the playoffs.
or the fact that there's like a literal definition that is derivative from the term. They're all-stars, right?
Yeah.
All-stars. DeAndre Ayton is not an all-star. He's a number one pick who is 22 years old, who is not on the level of the guys.
Max contract too.
Maybe. Maybe. Based on his position and the availability of guys like him, possibly, but he is not. He is not a star yet. He's a guy who averages 14 and 10. Okay. He is not a star yet. Devin Booker was a volume scorer on a bad team until 12 months ago when they went on an 8-0 run in the bubble. He has been an all-star replacement selection, and now he's 24 years old playing in the NBA Finals. In four of those games, he went off, including scoring over 30 in one game where he got to the free throw line zero times, which is pretty insane for a guy who's supposed to be a star player. He went over 40 twice. This is a guy who is 24 years old.
I'm not upset
because he's got a long future. And he's been, and
we're gonna
hold him to standards that he's not going to hold himself
back. There's no guarantee you're going to get back to where you were.
But at this point, we know it's possible. We know what's possible.
Yeah, but you can't just act
he knows what he can do.
Oh, okay, sarah, sarah. I'm happy to be here.
This didn't happen against, like, the Knicks or something. This happened against the Bucks, who you're about to make the argument that Giannis is the best player in the world. That's the thing that we need to focus on. It's not a matter of whether a bunch of guys who had never been to the playoffs before could find a way to get consistent by the end. Now, Chris Paul is a completely different conversation, and I'm willing to argue about him too. But it's not a question of whether or not a very young team found a way to win 14 games when their best, an actual star player, busted his shoulder and got COVID and hurt his wrist. I am proud of this team. I am not upset. Giannis was the best player on the court in the entire playoffs. And I'm going to uphold whatever you have to say about Giannis being the best player in the NBA.
I'm agreeing
with that
part.
The Suns got beat by the best team in the NBA.
Yeah,
in 1993.
You can't act like you're not upset about it. I hear it in your voice. Yes, you are.
I'm not.
Okay, hold up. You guys weigh in. Shoot us a text. 888-218-293-7547. Does Ralph sound upset right now?
I'm upset at you. The Suns got beat by a better team. If I lose an argument to you, I'll be upset. Because that would be the lesser person winning the argument. The Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the NBA with the best player in the NBA. And their other players, despite what every stupid pundit on the planet wants to say, did not step up. They actually regressed in the NBA Finals against a bunch of dudes in diapers. It was Giannis elevating his game, putting up a 50-burger in Game 6, playing everybody on the defensive end of the ball, like not getting discouraged when Chris Paul busted corner shots in his eye over and over and over and over again. Chris Paul, the big disappointment, who shot 55%
on
the series.
No, I'm not saying that they're a big...
And most of that was in Giannis' face. And he kept his head in the game.
The only thing that would be disappointing, if I were you, the only thing that would be disappointing to me would be the ends of the games where they turn the ball over, falling on the damn ground, like that... So as far as all the rest of the game, they clearly played well enough to be in the games. I'm saying that I would be disappointed severely because of the way we performed when it was clutch time.
Here are the things I did not like that I'll be very honest about. The ending sequence of Game 5 is going to be hard to swallow for the rest of my life because Devin Booker's shot is right there at the key. He drove into the defense, Holiday crashed down, stole the ball, Chris Paul fouled when he never should have, and then when Giannis missed that free throw, they gave up an offensive rebound. That might be the most painful sequence of Suns basketball
I have ever seen.
So
bad, like he bricked the free throw so bad, nobody could rebound it. Like that was
right, but he shouldn't have been at the free throw line in the first
place. Correct. I would agree
because Chris Paul is not going to be able to do anything, and then Chris Paul also risked the possibility of severely injuring Giannis. Just in that situation showed a lack of preparation and mental fortitude, but it was situational. It was reactive. They're young. I don't ever want to see that shit again. Other than that, and also like factoring in the fact that they were genuinely getting beat at the time, they had clawed their way back into a game where they were getting beat. And the weird thing about games 4 and 5 that I'm able to look at them and say, okay, well, like some things just aren't meant to be, is that in game four, they did something that has never been done before in the history of the NBA, which is shoot over like 52%, give up under 40% and lose.
But at 17 turnovers to five, they literally just gave the ball away.
Right. And then, well, Milwaukee's defense was
I would agree with that. But there was no excuse for some of it. Yeah, some of them were just like some of them were unforced turnovers. Like they were just sloppy play. And that's where, as a fan, I would be frustrated.
Yeah, and a lot of it seemed like experience issues to me. And I know that nothing's guaranteed, but I know that the next time those guys go back,
the Bucks didn't have any finals experience either. They hadn't been out of the second round.
They've been in the playoffs every single year. This is the first time the Suns have been in the playoffs in 11 years.
I'm just saying they had never been out of the second.
If you take the playoff experience of the top eight guys who were actually getting minutes for both teams, one is like 15 games per player or something like that, and the other one's like three. So and that became evident in crucial points of the game.
Yeah,
Chris Paul struggled at times and was the best player on the court at times. But the standard that Chris Paul gets held to is bizarre.
But the thing is, he needed Booker to be better the way he didn't need to be. Like that was the thing about it, is that Giannis,
they needed to be good at the same time, and it didn't align. It only aligned, I think, twice.
Yeah, it didn't align. And they won both of those games. Yeah, neither one of them was good in the end of game four, five, and six. But the person who was good, aside from Chris Paul,
I think Chris Paul played pretty good in the fourth quarters of game five and six. It was Devin Booker not making any threes. And then I got to be honest, I think there might be some residual effects of how Devin Booker was officiated in these playoffs that might screw with his head for a little bit, because I'm pretty sure Devin Booker had something like 20 offensive fouls. And he thought that he was trying to play like Giannis. Now, it's different when you're 6'9" with a 7'6" wingspan. You don't have to drive at the basket. Giannis never has to drive at the basket. He can drive where he wants to, and then his reach will put him in a position to where it would be like any other normal player was driving to the basket. Devin Booker would drive at the basket and draw charges constantly. And I think that started to get in his head. And the other thing that Devin Booker does that he's just going to have to grow out of is if he turns the ball over, he reacts by fouling. And that is something that like your 10th, 11th, 12th guy on the roster does.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to get past that. But at the same time, the Suns actually forced Drew Holiday to have a historically bad shooting performance. Defensively, they deserve credit for that. The Suns' biggest flaw in this series, because honestly, at this point, the way that Giannis was playing and with Dario Saric tearing his ACL and the Suns waffling on whether or not to use Frank Kaminsky, I think Giannis was going to get his. I'm resolved. I don't have a problem with the way Giannis was officiated either. I don't. He went to the free throw line a lot, and he earned it because the Suns didn't know how to defend him correctly. There were only a few that I was like, well, that's questionable, and the Suns got those back as well. There was that Jay Crowder tripping over his own feet, and the Suns got that call at the end of, because Bobby Portis also doesn't have that level of respect. There were weird calls on both sides. I thought it was officiated fine. I'm not part of like the. Yeah. I like to hate on Scott Foster, but I'm not blaming him. Even though it is statistically pretty incredible for a guy who is 65-31 outside of Scott Foster officiating playoff games and 0-13 with him officiating playoff games.
Yeah, I didn't think Scott Foster had any impact on the game last night. In terms of negatively toward the Suns. Okay, now on to Giannis. Giannis, so we've talked prior about who the best player in the NBA is. And granted, for a long time, for over a decade, it's been LeBron James. And we've talked about who's going to be the next torchbearer for the NBA. Because in the 80s, it was Bird and Magic. Like, they carried the league. Like, they were the people who were most influential in the league in terms of TV ratings, importance outside of the game, all of those things.
We've tried to give this torch away three other times, and it never stuck.
Yeah. And then it was Michael Jordan, and that was clear as day. And then it goes to then it went to Kobe, and then Kobe went to LeBron, And now we've been searching like, oh, who's it going to be?
And the we tried to give it to Steph. We tried to give it to KD. And then I'm going to be honest. I think that we did give it to somebody who refused to take it.
Who?
Kawhi.
Yeah. He was like, I don't want that responsibility.
Right. I'm going to leave Toronto and be a journeyman title collector.
See, but thing is, though, is that I think to be the face of the league. So if Giannis is going to be that guy to be the next torchbearer, right? He's got to consistently be in the finals or at least in the East. Like, he's got to be a part of that championship conversation every year, because to be the face of the league, you have to become polarizing. And that's where Steph had an opportunity to do it. But obviously, Klay got hurt, all of those other things, too. And Steph's a little bit older, too. So yes, Steph is still in that conversation. But Giannis, if he can get to the finals a few years in a row, he'll become that polarizing figure that people become, that they learn to hate on some level. And then you'll have people on this side saying, Giannis is the best player in the world. And then all these people trying to make arguments why he's not. And then those are the people that clash, and that's what drives TV ratings.
It started.
Yeah, and can Giannis become the thing, like LeBron James is the thing that leads every television show and radio segment. If he does something, it leads, right? So now, can Giannis consistently be in that lead role is the question.
Yes, I'll give you six examples as to why. Number one, he's already got two MVPs, a DPOY, and a ring. So, like, he's already got the foundation, and he did it earlier than anybody else. Number two, as he plays in the finals, in order to drum up interest, or because these people are genuinely psychotic, you had people coming up with some of the wildest takes I've ever heard. Doug Gottlieb saying Drew Holiday, who was having a historically bad offensive performance over the course of the finals, had one good game on the offensive end, was a good facilitator, was a good defender, but literally dropped off 0.143 from his regular season shooting percentage in this NBA Finals. You have Doug Gottlieb making an argument for Drew Holiday for Finals MVP over Giannis. Ryan Hollins came out and said that Giannis is arguably worse than he is in 2019. In 2019, the Milwaukee Bucks went up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals on the Toronto Raptors. From there, from that point, Giannis averaged 20-13 with four turnovers a game and shot 44%. After going down 0-2 in this series, Giannis shot over 60%. Giannis averaged over 35 points a game. Giannis averaged those same 13 rebounds per game. And I think Giannis had something like three total turnovers in four games. He is not the same player that he was 2 years ago. Ryan Hollins had to lie in order to make a case for Chris Middleton, who also has epically cold games from time to time. So you already have that. As soon as the game ended, Skip Bayless, who chooses the best player in the league at any given time, which has been LeBron for almost his entire career, he chooses that player to then neg and go against in order to be that player's villain. After the Bucks won a title, and as Giannis was crying on the bench, Skip Bayless announced to everybody that it's interesting that you would give the finals MVP to a guy who didn't actually close out the series. And he's talking about the shot that Chris Middleton made from the elbow so that the Bucks would win by like 9 instead of 7.
Yeah.
It didn't affect shit. Like, so you have all of these people trying to stake their claim as opposition to Giannis Antetokounmpo because they know, right? And then you have him going viral for accepting drawings from a little girl. You have him going viral for going to Chick-fil-A and ordering a 50 piece to go with the 50 piece that he put up last night. You had half Sprite, half lemonade trending on Twitter today because that's what he ordered.
Okay, here is Giannis going to Chick-fil-A. And there was one thing that I noticed from this, and I'll talk about it after we play the clip. This is Giannis at Chick-fil-A today.
Are you going to say your order?
Can I have a 50 piece? Sorry, I will put you. Can I put your camera? Do you mind or no?
Sure.
I just there's 150,000 people watching you right now.
Really?
Yes. So can I have please a 50 piece Mac Minis? 50 exactly.
Okay.
Not 51. None. 49. Chicken minis. Yes. 50. And let me have a large drink. No ice. Half Sprite. Half lemonade.
What was your takeaway from that video?
He's compelling. That was funny. He was straight up in the drive-thru waiting his turn with the trophy between his legs with 150,000 people watching him. He's compelling. I think the number one thing is that he came out after it was done, took a shot at the entire NBA culture of super teams.
Okay, we'll get to that.
He's there, man.
Yeah.
It's that he's the dude.
Well, this video I thought summed up Giannis to begin with. The fact that he went to Chick-fil-A, went on live, and then orders a 50 piece is trolling, right? Which I love. I 100% love that. And then the second thing was he was like, excuse me, ma'am. Is it okay if I put you on camera? Like, he was humble enough in that moment to still have respect and love for some and be courteous to somebody else. In that, in his greatness, in everything that he could have just forgotten to do that, he was like, oh, okay, sorry. You know, and then showed her that decency and then came back with the troll in between it. And truthfully, I was not necessarily in the Giannis camp because I appreciated how good he was, right? But I was not a guy who was just sold on Giannis because to be a superstar at that level, you have to get it done in the playoffs. And he hadn't gotten past the second round while having two MVPs, which I had been criticizing Westbrook, Harden, the two Giannises for guys who were winning MVPs but not getting to the finals, you know, and hadn't been. So I thought that that was, you know, like whether I didn't like it. So but the way, and I like tough guys because I'm a huge Kobe fan, Jordan, all that. And the toughness, mental fortitude, everything that he displayed in this series made me a Giannis fan.
He has also the two things that have allowed LeBron James haters foothold over the last 15 years. He's not the best shooter from the outside, and he is physically incomparable.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
And those are it, when you see people who like genuinely hate LeBron James, not for any of the off the court stuff or what he means or any of that stuff, but for the people who are just critics of LeBron James' game, they say he's just physically blessed. And if he was really the GOAT, he would develop into a better shooter because they have that Steph Curry thing to sort of hold over his head, even though that wasn't Kobe and it wasn't Michael and it wasn't any of the other GOATs.
That's
either
the James Harden argument about Giannis. Well, if I was 7 feet tall and that big, I'd just run over people too. Well, he running over with a damn championship. So Harden, you got to eat your words, homie. But Giannis, though, he did. Ralph mentioned that he did take a shot at super teams after the game, and here's what he had to say.
You know, obviously, I wanted to get the job done. You know, but that's my stubborn side. Like, it's easy to go somewhere and go and win a championship with somebody else. It's easy. I could go. I don't want to put anybody in the spot, but I could go to a super team and, you know, just do my part and win a championship. Still won. But this is the hard way to do it, and this is the way. And we did it. You did it, man.
Jim on the front right.
I love that, dude, because he just has that toughness that's just like, he just don't give a fuck. Like, I mean, Think about it. He looks up to LeBron. LeBron shows up to the game. He don't even speak to LeBron because he's locked in on what he's doing. Like, he's such a throwback player in a time of, yeah, kumbaya, let's be friends with everybody. He's like, F your friends until the off season. And then even then, he like, I don't fool with these dudes like that. I'm trying to knock their face off.
And it's refreshing. I mean, I think super teams are one of those things that were like, if it happens for you, you're not going to say anything, but it's frustrating anytime it takes away from your possibility for James Harden to get fat and force his way to New York, or Antonio Davis to have the most transparent clutch driven path to LA of all time. And what's funny is you can actually take the Bucks payroll, and it's pretty comparable to all these super teams because they believe in and invested in the talent that they have developed over time there. And biggest
they drafted
risk
really well too.
Yeah. And the biggest risk to this team was obviously investing in it, because it also could have ruined the Bucks forever. Putting that much money into the talent that you have on hand. Then they lost a point guard. Like, people forget that they lost a very good point guard.
Dante and DiVincenzo, or you mean?
No, I'm talking about their boy that went to Indy. They're talking about their boy that went to the Pacers in free agency.
Oh, Matthew Brogdon.
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, and then bringing in Drew Holiday was, you know, it was risky as far as, you know, the chemistry and everything like that. But they had the defensive energy. You and I do not see eye to eye as far as the coaching. I think I don't think that it was a matter of not being able to make adjustments. I think you just play against some good ass teams sometimes.
Well, and if Mike Budenholzer had not, if the Suns had won in 4 or 5, he was in danger of being fired.
Which is wild. But no, at the same time, you might be right in that the potential was there to win in the finals. But they found a hole and they exploited it, which was the Suns did not understand the way to defend Giannis. And Giannis got progressively harder to defend because there were times when he was out in the corners, not in the corners, on the elbows outside the three-point line, shooting from 26. There were times when he was dribbling against Jay Crowder and like trying to cross him up 18 feet from the basket, throwing spin moves, scoop shots, hook shots, or passing out
incredible shots in game six.
And then he also, when he got down low, was nearly impossible. And when he did miss, he was the one following up on his own shots.
What'd you think about him? I thought the thing that really sealed the Suns' fate last night was Giannis's will to win. He willed himself to go 17 for 19 from the free throw line, which is inexplicable. I mean, it's
right.
It's like,
right. And that second miss didn't even matter because it came with like 3 seconds left.
Yes. So he was essentially 17 for 18.
Yeah. There was a bar in Milwaukee that was giving out a free shot for every free throw he made, and I'm pretty sure everyone at that bar is dead.
Dude, do you realize 17 for 18? If Steph shot 17 for 18, you'd be like, oh, he's having a great night at the free throw line, let alone a 50-some percent free throw shooter. I just thought that his will to win was absolutely outstanding. Now, on to the next thing, and that is
it, well, you answer the question, is he the best?
Yes, he's the best player in the world right now, because
conditionally, LeBron, like, he has to continue to earn it over time.
Yeah. But at this moment, is there anybody that you would take to build a team around besides him? Because LeBron's too old to say, I'm gonna build my franchise around this guy right now. You can still do Steph because he just had one of his best seasons of all time while he's 32. You can argue Kevin Durant too. But after that, who else are you really going to argue?
26 years old, well-adjusted, 40 extra pounds, plus post moves, an outside shot that's serviceable, the ability to take people off the dribble and
pass the ball,
alter and block shots in a way that we haven't seen since, like,
and he does it without
90s fouling. Era basketball. Yeah, he doesn't foul. He stays present. He's humble off the court. He's got his family system around him. I don't think so. And I don't think that I'm really not sure an argument can be made for anybody else. He's special, man. And but I'm trying to remember if maybe I went here with Kawhi.
He only follows 7 people on Twitter, which means that he keeps the outside noise out. Like it's just
yeah, crazy, man. He's handsome. He's personable. He's a champion. He's an MVP. He's a DPOY. Like, no, I don't think so. What I'm trying to remember is to put myself back in the place of after Kawhi hit that shot and is sitting his ass on the ground watching it go in, and then after they won that title.
I never said he was the best player.
He was having himself a playoff series. Like, I don't blame anybody who said it. I'll just say that. But I don't think I was one of them. But I do feel that way about Giannis. Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
I will tell you this. Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton got to get stronger.
Yep.
If they, because I would love to see him again. The Suns won the regular season matchups by a total of 2 points, both of them. They had an incredible series against each other in the NBA Finals. This would be a kick-ass thing to run it back if your Lakers can't somehow lure Chris Paul to LA. Dude,
that would be the optimal scenario for the NBA for a run it back. Dude, and then Ayton's got to be willing to put people in the rim and all of that stuff. But to put a button on – actually, we'll do that in the best of social media.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The next thing up, Maria Taylor. Maria Taylor, who is the host of NBA Countdown. You've seen her on Game Day, everything. She has decided to leave ESPN. There were reports that ESPN offered her something in the neighborhood of $4 million a year. She turned it down, and that was to go potentially to, rumors are that she's going to resurface at NBC in a couple days when the Olympics start. So there's a, like, but I just thought it was crazy that last night was the end of the finals. Her contract expired today. And if the Suns had won that game, imagine ESPN, but they probably made a contingency plan for it ahead of time, like saying, hey, yo, Maria, how can we get you for game 7? Because calling Rachel Nichols had to be off the table, right?
Yeah, I mean, Rachel Nichols still kept herself in the news. She still got that interview with Devin Booker that went viral about him talking about which Impala to take to game 6, which is pretty funny. Or it might have been the non-existent game 7. And then she also got that comment out of him where he said, you know, no one should ever compare me to Kobe Bryant, which I thought the reaction to was corny. Like, it was just a bunch of dudes being like, we've been new, jackass. Like, no, he's affirming your dumbass hero worship, you weirdos. But so she kept doing her job, which I guess is all you can do in this circumstance. The whole thing was definitely weird and uncomfortable. However, a new star is born for sure. And we knew she was going to be a star after her NBA draft coverage. But I'm, it'll be interesting to see if the two of them can work together. Is that going to be what's left over of ESPN's coverage from here on out?
Yeah. Oh, what's her name?
Malika Andrews.
Yes.
Also 26 years old. 26 years old.
She was really good.
The trophy ceremony interview had energy. It was cool. Yeah. It was cool. I always thought Rachel Nichols felt a little uncomfortable. LeBron. Yeah. I always thought Rachel Nichols felt a little bit uncomfortable in the sideline stuff. She would my wife would always point this out. She had such an interesting stance. She had 1 foot forward, 1 foot sideways, tucked way back. And it was like she was more focused on the angle that the camera was hitting her than the question she was asking, which is weird because she's such a talented interviewer. I mean, I've seen her on NFL sidelines doing the same thing. She's been doing it forever. But Malika Andrews seemed more interested in capturing the energy of the moment, the authenticity of the moment. She did really, really good, not just for her age, but period. I'm just curious to see if they'll be able to pair the two of them together with everything that went down, or if the dominoes are going to keep falling at ESPN. Here's my question for you on Maria Taylor.
Okay.
Is people are saying that she should be treated wherever she goes, which we're assuming is NBC, like the next Jim Nance or Mike Tirico or stuff like that. So does that mean that we think that there could be a home for her in play-by-play? Because that's what those guys do.
Mm. That's
part of the time.
I don't know if she wants to do play-by-play. I mean, I don't know. Play-by-play is a totally different skill. I'm not saying that she can't do it, but it's something that you don't start out at, you know, on the primetime game doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
so
are we
saying like a Costas type role?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
Because I don't know. It's maybe something different.
That's where
maybe
I think
something
that
hasn't been done.
Land is in the studio, on the ground. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
At all the big events.
Like a Kurt Manafi type?
Yes. Yes. To where like they can host like they can host soccer. They can host the Olympics. They can host every single thing. And I think that she's proven the way that she's handled football after she was a basketball and a volleyball player, I think, like that, the way she's handled it. So I think that she's diverse in her knowledge enough to be able to handle, and she handles names well. She handles uncomfortable situations, like all of that. So
I'm like, oh, George is saying that it's a diversity hire, but diversity of knowledge.
Yes.
Like, wait a minute. Uh-oh.
Nah. But
no, she's great, man. She's awesome.
But how do you think that conversation would have went if ESPN had to go to Rachel Nichols and be like, hey, yo, Rachel, Maria's gone. You want to come back for game 7?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they had reached some like 2-day extension, like gentleman's agreement or something like that.
Yeah. But would you have taken, like, assuming that didn't happen, if you're Rachel Nichols, do you take that job?
I don't think so. I don't think it's because her whole thing is she said she didn't want to be the story. And if she came back just for game 7, then I would like to think that would not be the case. It'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward, because I would like to believe that Rachel Nichols took herself off of all this and that it wasn't a mutual agreement with ESPN, because it wouldn't make ESPN look very good to hold a position, even if it was the wrong position, for 11 and a half months to then turn around and in the last 2 weeks of the last part to say, actually, we were wrong this whole time about you being in the clear, therefore we're gonna take opportunities away from you, because then she has a beef, you know. And with this whole thing has been allowed to play out with the typical, like, certain media outlets taking the white person's side, certain media outlets taking the black person's side, when that's not at all what this is. What some people lead you to believe that is all that this is, but it's not. This is a personal and personnel issue where they couldn't come to an agreement on moving past an issue that some people took incredibly personally for very good reasons. And because of that, it wrecked the chemistry of everything that was going on in the workplace. And then it's a tricky situation to say that it would be Maria Taylor's professional responsibility to move forward and be amicable when she feels as though she was the one that was wronged, and that she shouldn't be in a position to feel like she has to trust a coworker who would talk that way about her behind her back. So the whole thing is super stupid and unfortunate, and it'll be interesting to see what ESPN does from here. But I'm just curious as to what NBC still has the rights to and how they'll use her moving forward, because if you make the jump from ESPN to NBC, basically what you're saying is, you know, put me on the world stage,
yep.
Whether it's Olympics, whatever NBC has access to as far yep. as game shows, talent shows.
They're probably going to create her own show for her.
They should. They should, to be honest. I don't know. I'm really interested. I think that the viewers of the certain networks stay the viewers of the certain networks. I don't know how much she moves the needle, and I'm not a network executive, so I can't quantify value. I just know who I feel like does a good job and who I feel like I like listening to and don't like listening to. I really like listening to her.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. The next thing up is, you know who may get a bump up is Kimberly Martin, who NPR clearly thinks that. Dude, this is something that pisses black people off like so much, dude. I mean, so much. I mean, it is absolute craziness, dude. And they do it all the time. They do it all the time. And I'm sitting here like, bruh, and you wonder why black people like see this stuff. And then they're like, yo, it's an innocent mistake. Really, though? It don't feel that innocent. Here's the picture. So NPR puts up an article that says Maria Taylor is leaving ESPN after a colleague's remarks about race went public. It's a picture of Kimberly Martin. These are not the same people. Good Lord. It's bad, dude. It's bad. And, you know, and then they're going to be like, oh, black people are overreacting. No, stop saying all black people look alike. They don't. All white people don't look alike. All Asian people don't look alike. Get out of here, man. All right. The next thing up, Deion Sanders. So he was upset that, well, actually, I'll just play it for you. Jeez.
Thanks, Coach.
Okay, let me get Nick. Let me get Nick. Nick's a good guy.
Nick Suss, you're up.
Hey, Deion. I was just wondering if you could.
Oh, let's back up a little bit. You don't call Nick Saban Nick. Don't call me Deion now. Okay.
I call Nick Saban Nick.
No, you don't. Deion. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's a lie. If you call Nick Nick, you know you'll get cussed out on the spot. So don't do that to me. Treat me like Nick.
Okay, Deion.
All right.
Just
bruh. Okay.
That was a messy conversation between two human beings.
Okay. Let me explain what's going on in Deion's head. Deion has a chip on his shoulder about number one being really considered a coach, right? First thing. He's got a chip on his shoulder about the SWAC, which is black colleges. And how, because he talked about how they don't get the media coverage, all of this stuff, which impacts draft statuses, all this stuff. And then he's like, yo, you don't call Nick Saban Nick. At SEC Media Day, Nick Saban was called Nick 8 times. And I do understand where, like, and I think this is probably the former player in me. If I see a coach, I'll be like, hey, what's up, coach? How you doing? You're not my coach, but I just call you coach because I guess because I'm a player. But And then, but being in this role more, I do start to call more coaches by their first name. And it's weird to me sometimes, and I think Deion's kind of stuck in that a little bit. And he took something that he – and he's got egg on his face because he's completely wrong. People call coaches by their first name all the time.
Yes. I call coaches coach. I don't really enjoy talking to coaches, but I've had to do it for a job quite a bit. I call coaches coach. I would not feel comfortable using their names. I don't feel comfortable talking to them at all. You're one of the only people I actually like talking to. So I'll explain things from the media end here. I don't know this man, and I don't know why he did what he did, and I don't know why he pulled a Jim Rome. More and more media members in today's day and age will go out of their way to put their pronouns in their bio to show solidarity with people who are trying to live their gender identity in a more authentic way, right? You see it all the time. Go to a journalist's bio, you got the he, him, they, them, stuff like that, right? So when somebody tells you that they want to be referred to in a certain way,
that's how you refer to
them. Regardless of the way that they present it, you eat your pride and you do the thing that they say, and you do it out of a place of respect. Okay, so no excuses for him to say Deion two more times after Deion told him not to. We watched Jim Rome learn that lesson with Jim Everett, right? However, Deion Sanders is full of shit for what he said there. He knew he was full of shit.
No, he didn't. I'm telling you, he did not. He thought that he was right. That's why, dude, he was wait. Do you understand? That's one of those things that's pre-prepared. He had envisioned this in his mind already, that this conversation was going to come up by somebody because it's media day.
And but do you think he cared about being wrong? Do you think he really cared? I don't think, because he put that video out of like him doing a victory dance, even though by that time a million people had told him that Nick Saban absolutely goes by Nick.
Some people won't let their, like, this is the difference in the humility, is that Deion, who I like, right, in general, you also have to understand that even if you generally like somebody and generally what they stand for, that they can be wrong in a situation. And Deion's wrong in this situation. This was pre-prepared. He was waiting on this to happen.
Deion's not wrong in this situation if he achieved the outcome he set out to achieve. He's always operated that way. Sometimes when you see six moves down the chessboard, you miss move three. And that, I feel like, has been Deion Sanders his entire life, right? He gets credit for being the best athlete. And I mean, I go so hard for Deion Sanders sometimes that I will fight people who try to tell me that Bo Jackson was a better two-sport star. Like, I don't believe you. It's Deion, right? I feel that way. And I have always tried to give him credit for how intentional and intelligent he's been at almost every step, from the way that he was dressed at the draft to the things that he said, the way he positioned himself in media, and the way that he got this gig. I think that somewhere deep down inside, he doesn't care whether or not it's true. He was just going to say it anyway, because he got to draw attention to the SWAC, to JSU. Like, he got to achieve all of his outcomes, even if he sort of looks bad in the first place. He's also starting to get in that coach brain, which is, you don't question me, I am the authority, period, right or wrong. He should probably be getting more criticism right now for actually blocking a reporter who wrote up something about one of his star recruits getting charged with assault, that the program ultimately ended up blocking that reporter from being able to ask any questions at SWAC Media Day, including of Deion Sanders' quarterback son. So that should be the thing that we're criticizing him for, not this. But I want to speak from the reporter end, because most reporters who are worth their weight in salt, like who are actually doing the job, they have a nose for bullshit and they are anti-authority. You fall into this role because you naturally don't trust the establishment and you can sniff out bullshit, right? You react a little bit poorly, in my opinion, when that nose that you have for bullshit gets bullshit shoved directly up it by somebody who is acting in a position of authority that isn't actually over you. For example, period.
Ralph.
I mean, I lost me there for a second, but yeah. I'm just saying that it was a recipe for disaster. When you have somebody who is anti-authoritarian and you have somebody that's getting into their authority zone, you have somebody who has a nose for bullshit, and then you have somebody else who's using bullshit to achieve their ultimate means, those two things aren't going to mix well.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dion's not going to apologize. He's the double down guy. And this was a case of he was wrong, but also he was wrong about what he said about Nick Saban, but he was not wrong about wanting to be addressed as coach. And the media member continuing to do it, he's out of pocket for that too.
Right. And people are pointing out that there's a clip of like Deion Sanders standing up from signing his JSU contract and saying, only call me Coach Prime from now on. Like, because I'm not going to answer to anything else. So people are trying to use that as evidence that people should have known. But
yeah.
But when you tell a reporter, like, you wouldn't call Nick Saban Nick. And you could like, turn around and be like, he's nicking my phone. Like, I've known Nick a long time. You know?
Exactly. Now, speaking of media days, before we get to media days, it is time for Cancel or Consequence.
Do we need to cancel, or is there a justified consequence? Let's find out now.
Cancel or Consequence is the point in the show where we literally tell you whether somebody was canceled or whether they received consequences for what they did. So Ralph has no idea what's happening here. And I put out on my Twitter, because this thing was trending the other day. It was one of those one gotta go things. And this is, and if you've listened to us on Pac-12 Apostles, you already know where this is headed. And it was a candy bar, one gotta go. And the candy bars presented were a Twix, Almond Joy, Kit Kat, Butterfinger, Snickers, Reese's, Baby Ruth, M&M's, and Milky Way. And this was very easy for me because it was like one gotta go. Actually, this is a competition for worst candy bars alive. It number one, worst candy, U.S. candy bar presented in that picture, Butterfinger. Second, Reese's. Third, Milky Way. It's not one gotta go. It's three gotta go. This is, and cancel or consequence is, am I being canceled because my mentions were filled up? We talked about this on Fox Sports Radio on Sunday. Dan Byer surprised me with it. And I was like, yo, no, I am in the silent majority. There are plenty of people like me who think that Reese's peanut butter cups, Reese's Pieces are trash, but they're scared to admit it because people will shame you for it and act like this mediocre candy is good.
Oh my God. You know, I know that I'm like just fat in, not physically, but like in heart and spirit.
Yeah.
Put that picture back up.
Okay.
My reaction to seeing this, because it says it's got 9 candy bars in like a tic-tac-toe arrangement numbered 1 through 9, and it says one gotta go in giant font at the top. Do you want to know what my reaction to that was?
Oh, no.
No, it was like, says who? Like, why?
You gotta cooperate. All right, so.
No,
so
like, Ralph. I'm not going to play by your. I'm eating all 9. Thanks.
but one got to go, Ralph. Who are you choosing?
Gun to my head. People aren't going to lie. Like, and please understand that this is not. Let's name them. So there's Twix, Almond Joy, Kit Kat, Butterfinger, Snickers, Reese's, Peanut Butter Cups, Baby Ruth, Peanut M&M's. And Milky Way is the 9th one. In like a weird life or death situation where this actually mattered, I would probably say Snickers.
What?
right?
Like, man, if you don't get the hell out of here, Ralph.
Snickers are great. Snickers are great.
Why would you put a Snickers out to pasture out of all of these candy bars?
Here's what.
You would send a Snickers away before you would send a Milky Way away? Before you would send nasty-ass Reese's or Butterfingers away?
Okay. Hear me out on this. I'm going to send Snickers away. I'm going to take a Baby Ruth and stack it on top of a Milky Way and have a Snickers. Like, you didn't take the Snickers away from me. I'm still finding a way to eat Snickers. Milky Way has like 2/3 of the ingredients of Snickers, and Baby Ruth has the rest. Right?
Wow.
That's my workaround.
Wow.
That's see, you thought that you were providing something that I couldn't get out of. But like, you don't know the depth of my fatness. You don't.
All right. Well, and there was a
lot of Almond Joy hate on that thread. And I just want to say
Almond Joys are amazing.
Yeah. And I just want to say to anybody who hates Almond Joy, cool. More for me.
Thank you. Thank you. When I was a kid and an adult and I would get on Halloween, bro, Almond Joys, I will trade you one Snickers for actually, you wouldn't even have to trade people for Almond Joys. They would just give them to you.
Yeah, and that's like that also, like, as you get older and you understand, like, how the environment works and, like, some of the climate crisis we're going through, especially you living in California and understanding, like, issues with water and sustainability.
Dude,
like,
rained in, like...
Yeah, there's a little bit of a guilty pleasure in eating Almond Joy because you know you're helping destroy the whole planet. Like, almonds are straight up, like, the shittiest thing for the environment ever. Like worse than cows and methane. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, oh, I just want like take a like just Google almonds California water crisis, and the next time you see an Almond Joy, you're gonna be like, damn it.
Really?
Like, I'm dead ass serious. Apparently, California has so many almond orchards, and your typical almond tree takes like. I'm going to be making this up off the top of my head, but like 5 times the amount of water as like any crop ever. To produce almonds, you're going to go thirsty.
Well, it's a good thing I love cashews. even though I do know that cashews have a poisonous layer around them in between the nut and the actual between the shell and the nut. So you can't, so they have to be processed a different way. That's why cashews are so expensive.
I did not know that.
Yes. So the next thing up, the SEC, they have new COVID rules. Their commissioner, Greg Sankey, announced that games will not be rescheduled this fall due to COVID, and it's up to teams to get vaccinated, and if they don't have enough players, they may have to forfeit. And 6 of the 14 SEC teams have reached the 80% vaccination threshold. He said, do you like this?
No. No.
Why not?
What I mean is the option.
You can't get to rescheduling games and acting like we did last year when there are things that you can do to prevent that from to prevent you from being in a situation where you would be short on players.
I guess it comes from, I don't know. This is a deep seated issue with me, I feel like. And part of it is, you know, from getting to know you, I feel like you've kind of poured into this. I don't like anybody to be told what to do. I like people to do things of their own free will based on the information available to them. And I personally feel as though the information that is available to people points in one very clear direction, which is our best hope to get out of this pandemic is for as many people who don't have a reason to otherwise that isn't like health related or between them and their doctor to get vaccinated, right? And I want people making that decision of their own volition. I don't want people getting poked in the arm when they otherwise would not. It results in the same thing, but it's a will, heart, and head issue. Like, you, if you like, when I was a teacher, right? Kids would do their homework begrudgingly. Kids would do the reading that I would assign. Kids would follow the rules of the classroom. But you know the difference between a kid who is bought in and choosing to do the right thing and somebody who is just doing it so that they pass. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The idea that I would have to force anybody to do anything for their own good is unsettling to me. And I know that there's a lot of people who are still very against.
But it's not for their own good. It's for the entire league's good, like in terms of college football and the SEC, that they're like, we're not going to get to jumping through hoops for your quote unquote personal choices. So here are our rules. You do as you wish. It's still giving people free will.
I guess we're getting dangerously close to Cole Beasley territory of where he's saying, like, show me how this is not financially motivated. And the result still ends up being the same.
Yeah.
We're having this battle over intent, and I feel like I'm feeding into it. But I want people to get vaccinated because it's the right thing to do. I don't want anybody to be told to be vaccinated or like they don't have a choice or that their team's going to forfeit. I want the reasoning to be that they feel comfortable with the research and the process. Three of the last 5 days, George, we've jumped back over 50,000 cases a day of COVID.
Yeah.
Dude, Foo Fighters are canceling stuff. Gabriel Iglesias, the comedian's canceling stuff. I'm watching concerts drop out here and there. And I'm watching Mitch McConnell come out and tell everybody, like, hey, get your ass vaccinated.
Mitch McConnell, Tommy Tuberville,
Sean Hannity.
Yes. Dude, like, once Tucker Carlson does it, the earth might blow up.
You can say some wild shit when things are trending down. You can, but then when things start to have an uptick based on the wild shit that you say, and you want to make sure that you're not the one assuming the responsibility for some of the stuff that you actually fed into, it's funny to watch how people who are grifting change their tune. And yes, we're seeing a lot of people who have been grifting on the very real outrage and confusion and division in this country who went and got vaccinated that then turned around and fought really hard for the right of people to do whatever they wanted. And I'm on that page with them. Like, I also am fighting really hard for you to do whatever it is you want. I just also really want it to be what I want. But I'm trying to convey that in a way, and I'm a nobody, but I'm trying to convey that in a way that is not alienating to people or writing them off for good or for eternity. I just went out to Wyoming. I'm vaccinated. I went to 6 different concerts. I went to a rodeo. I went to a street dance, and I knew I was around a bunch of people who weren't. And all I tried to do was tell them I feel really good about being here because of what I did and what I went through. And I hope the best for you all as well. But please, like, use that freedom that you have responsibly if you're going to be out and about and in crowds, understanding that things are back up above 50,000 a day for the first time since late April.
Yeah. Yeah. And dude, I think that people are finally seeing that there are people who didn't believe the seriousness of it at first, who are now having it impact their lives. There have been kids around us that have gotten it. It's just a lot, dude. It's been pretty.
There's crazy. A bunch of people who had mild symptoms from COVID who took the risk and went out there knowing that the symptoms would be mild based on their health profile, hoping because the odds were. And then the stuff that they got, that mild stuff, isn't going away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to do this again, man. Really, really don't want to do this again. I want the kids that I cover at the high school level to have a season. I want the parents to be able to go to the games. I want my reporters to be able to go to the games without feeling like their lives are in danger. One of my reporters was killed.
It's getting like we're getting dangerously close to having to give up some of our freedoms again. Like, that's the, like, I don't think that people really are necessarily understanding that part of it.
we're getting close to the real fight over people making you show your vaccine card.
Yep.
It, like, the people who said, like, they're going to start doing this, we got to resist because they're going to start doing this. The Marjorie Taylor Greens, who believe that it's a HIPAA violation to just ask them if they're vaccinated, which that's not how HIPAA works at all, Marjorie. Like, in any way, that's not how HIPAA works. Yeah. HIPAA is third-party disclosure of your medical information. Not, you have every right to refuse to answer.
Answer the question.
You don't get your you don't get your rights violated by somebody asking you questions.
Yeah, correct.
It bothers me so much that we have people who don't understand laws making laws. It is infuriating. But you for should, all of those people who said
a basic humanities test to be able to be in government. Like, if you have to take an SAT to go to school, if you have to take a Series 6, Series 7 to be an accountant or have any fiduciary duty, the bar to take to be a lawyer, you should have to pass a basic...
give them the citizenship test at least.
Yeah.
Like the same one that they use to grant citizenship to people who have emigrated or whatever. But I want to say this. Imagine you're in a relationship and it's healthy enough, but every single day you look at your significant other and say, "You're going to leave me, huh? You're going to leave me, huh? You're going to leave me, huh?" And there's no reason for them to leave, right? You have a good relationship outside of this one insecurity that comes out over and over again. And you keep saying it. You're going to leave me, aren't you? You're going to leave me, aren't you? And then one day they leave you. And the reason is you won't stop saying that they will.
Yeah.
That's the situation that we are in right now with these people who are afraid that you're going to have to prove you have a vaccine to do anything. Because that wasn't the case, and it hasn't been the case as we've reopened. But they keep saying this dumb shit, and now the numbers are going back up, and it's getting to the point where they say, "We want you to show us your papers."
Yep. Dude, I was getting ready to go to the doctor, and they were like, "We're only taking vaccinated patients." I was like, "Whoa." I was like, "Okay, cool." But it's just crazy. But now it is time for the best of social media.
Now. Here's the best of social media.
The best of social media is where we literally show you the best of social media. The first thing up today came from the NBA Finals. Oh my God. Dude, this just pulled at every single heartstring. Man, tears are the most powerful thing in the world. Like when you see a man cry and show just so much emotion, it moves you.
Monty, now that you've been through your first finals, can you process what you've learned from it, or is that going to take a while?
I think it's going to take me a minute, you know. I just don't take it for granted. It's hard to get here, and I wanted it so bad, you know. It's hard to process right now. It's hard, you know. That's all.
Thank you, Coach.
And that was Coach Monty Williams from the Phoenix Suns. Ralph, when I saw that, I was like, bruh. Like, and then if you pay attention, you actually could hear the celebrations of the Milwaukee people in the background. Like, dude, that's got to be hard, dude, because you got to sit up there and take your medicine while somebody else is so happy. And like, he's just a good man. And I was just moved by that.
I think it comes out in different ways with different people. I remember how upset everybody was with Cam Newton after the Panthers lost the Super Bowl to the Denver Broncos. Because Cam Newton looked like he didn't want to be there. I'm going to be honest, George, I don't see a difference. I don't see a difference in the way that Monty Williams chose to expose what he was feeling in that moment for everybody to see and what Cam Newton chose to cover up. I think that things manifest in different ways with different people who have been through different things. And Monty Williams has been through a lot as a basketball player. I don't think his playing career matched up with what he hoped it would be. As a man, he's experienced tragedy and disappointment beyond what a lot of people can even imagine. And he spent a year preaching to his team that everything that they wanted was on the other side of hard. And they worked and they worked and they worked and they lost. And there's a lot that he's probably going through right now, trying to reconcile and trying to process. And for him to be open with his emotions in that way, I think is important for a lot of men to see. And I think that's probably the difference between the two things. But ultimately, what it comes down to is you want to know that the people that you root for care at least as much as you, and hopefully more. And this is a man who is doing a highly paid job that serves as a form of entertainment for others, who is broken by the idea of not achieving his ultimate goal. And seems like a good man.
Yeah, dude, that was just heartbreaking. all right, the next thing up on the best of social media is, you know how poll voters have to trust their poll when they're going over it? Well, here's a video. Here is how poll voters practice. I didn't know that. I had never thought about how they practice, but it made sense that they have a pole that's attached to something that doesn't move. That way, then they can just practice on the bending and the trusting part of it.
Oh, you reached the elite stage. that's nothing that I saw when I was went back in track and field days. It was just guess and check, pretty much. Like, you went your turn, and if you didn't get it, then you lowered it a little bit. And if you did get it, you higher it a little bit. I didn't really see anybody practicing other than just doing, right? That was definitely new for me. Also, how many times do you think you can pull that off?
Once, maybe twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the same reason that I couldn't get rid of the Snickers, I'm going to say zero.
All right. The next thing up on the best of social media is the richest man in the world went to space in a rocket that was shaped like a how would you describe this shape, Ralph? Phallic symbol?
Quite phallic. Bro, his brother-in-law or his mistress's brother jacked his nude photos out of his phone and tried to leak them, and somehow Jeff Bezos kept the entire world from seeing his pic, and then he just put it on a rocket for everybody to see.
Dude, he was like, I'm gonna show you Richard Branson. I'm the biggest swinging dick around this park. I'm gonna make my rocket.
Man, what do you think it's like when he sees his girl's brother at like family functions and stuff?
Nah, he ain't coming. Actually, I honestly, just to avoid him, I probably would have found a new chick. Because dude, I can't trust you. I'm not having one single solitary conversation around you, period. Period.
Yeah, but you're going to have to, so that you're going to kick the woman to the curb that actually has all those photos? I think he might got himself stuck.
Yeah, true. True.
But I think he figured like, hey, if I just let everybody in the whole world see it and then I bring it to space so you have to look at it, I'm not going to be mad if these photos come out.
Yeah, but
watch him break up with her this week.
But what about the idea, though, that Jeff Bezos? Well, actually, all the reactions to him going to space were funny. They were like, hey, quick, hurry up and unionize while he's gone.
Somebody said, let's act like we don't know him. when he gets back, like everybody.
Dude, that'd be funny. And some people said, yo, now everybody at Amazon can actually take a bathroom break.
Yeah, there were a lot of things said. I try not to get too caught up in the like thinking about billionaires, because I'm sure it would drive me as nuts as it seems to drive a lot of people on the internet. Just the entire concept of it. But I will say that I don't care about space travel and never have. And I'm one of those lame people that isn't like impressed by it. Like I'm if somebody wants to like climb a tall mountain here on Earth,
so
and I'll be excited for them. But if sitting in a chair getting launched by somebody else's technology. And then I found out that a friend or a cousin of one of the kids that I cover, who actually just committed to University of Illinois, actually worked on the Blue Origin project. And I'm like, I had to kind of like pretend to be happy.
Okay. So if we go somewhere, we're doing a podcast. So Jeff Bezos starts listening to Right or Wrong podcast.
Correct.
He invites George and Ralph to come up to space with him. Are you going?
No. No, I am not.
Are what, you like serious?
Podcast from up there? Maybe if it's for the show. Here's what I would do. I'd float the idea to my wife, and if she was excited to see me go, my answer would be hell no. Like, this woman's trying to kill me. And if she was ambivalent, then the answer would just be regular no. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to space. Oh,
what?
No,
man, if
you would go to space,
if Jeff Bezos invites me to go up in the next Blue Origin rocket, I'm there, homeboy.
You are way too addicted to the you ain't up on this mindset,
dude.
Like,
dude,
to the point where it would take you to outer space.
When I go to South Africa, I'm going in the cage with the great whites around me.
I'm good. I will chill on the boat in the most cushioned seat they have. And I will applaud you when you get out. I understand
that I would be the first black person in a video that was like, that's like, man, he had no business out there with wild animals and something happened to me. So I do understand that I would run the risk of being the first black person captured on film in dying or being hurt by doing something that white people do.
You make me laugh that you're going to get your ass sent to space and the only thing they have to eat up there is Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh my God, dude. I would turn around immediately. But now the last thing on the best of social media, Ralph brought this to me. So in baseball has some really good female announcers, just like other sports do. One of my favorite is Doris Burke in basketball. I think that she is like the greatest, right? Color commentator. And here are baseball players talking about the first all women broadcast team. So the reaction to that was, no man actually says that.
I see. That's what I was. I'm just flat out curious in your
kitchen.
Take.
Kitchen.
Yeah, it's the kitchen people. The kitchen reply people have taken over the replies to that viral video, saying that this has to in some way be staged because no two men sit around and have a natural conversation about the advancement of women.
No, he said he saw on MLB Network that there was going to be an all women's broadcast. Like, okay, that's cool. Like that, I don't understand how, like, that's the thing about it is that people a lot of times are so caught up in this stuff that they can't see, that they can't even see the truth or something that's actually reasonable. Like, oh no, that's actually dope. That's noteworthy, right?
Yes. It's just projection, man. If you're a garbage human you and you don't have any friends that aren't, or they don't, or they excuse yourself. I'm gonna be honest, man. I was in Wyoming. I'll tell you this story off air because I was in Wyoming hanging out in somebody's basement who I don't know very well, watching game 5. And some of the people started to talk in such a way that would have made any decent human uncomfortable. And there was this guy down in the basement with us who pretended to get a phone call and walked out. And I was like, that guy gets it for sure. But you had all these other dudes who were like very comfortable saying the things that they were saying. And they did not pick up on the idea that this other guy wasn't actually getting a phone call.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, bro, I'm out.
Yeah. No, it was just like nobody answers the phone with, oh, yeah, I'm just down here in this. I can't hear you very good. So let me step out for a second so I can hear you better. You know, it's really good to talk to you. And I'm watching this guy walk up the stairs and I was like,
I wish that was me right now. With the situation.
Well, number one, there was 2 minutes left, so and I did not have a ride. So I kept focused on the television, and then I called a friend to pick me up right afterward. And it was a super uncomfortable situation. So, but like, okay. So that's the type of situation where situation. All of those dudes would be like, who sits around and has a serious conversation about the advancement of women?
Okay, so now here's the question for you. You were just in this situation.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say anything?
Why didn't I say anything in this dude's curious. House? Okay, so we're going to get into it. So this was actually like this was like a high school reunion type thing. So it's like a bunch of people who I kind of know peripherally.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'm in somebody else's house where I've never been before, surrounded by people I don't know. So I just, you know, found my way. Out and there were a couple of people that I did know really well, and they weren't like necessarily part of it, but I didn't want to say or do anything in that situation where I was very much the outsider compared to everyone else that was around. They all knew each other and had known each other for at least 40 years because it's a 40-year reunion, and I am a 37-year-old who is younger than the amount of time that they've known each other, who is probably not going to strike a blow for justice in that moment.
Yeah.
So and you know me as the type of person to like, to my own detriment.
Yes. Like, you look normally and be like, here's an opportunity for conflict. I'm going straight at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I pull the pin out of the grenade, then don't throw it. I'm going to be honest, man. It's definitely caused quite a few issues in my life that you know, when you have a family, you have to be a little bit more judicious. And in that moment, I was like, what do I do here? And I actually, like, I thought to myself, I was like, man, some of the people in my life would not be very proud of me right now. But I don't have a ride home. And I definitely want to see how this game ends. And okay. I'm just being honest.
And I appreciate that, dude. And I think that there's a lot of people who listen to this who will appreciate what it is that you have said. There's no judgment here. I just had questions.
I think you know exactly where I'm going with it, too. Some deep Wyoming speak.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You guys, that's Reister Wrong for today. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. Make sure you share the podcast with a friend. Tell a friend about it. Peace out. Catch you guys on Friday.